and welcome to United Way of the Mark Twain Area's United Talks. This is Denise Dameron, Executive Director at the organization, welcoming you to this week's episode.
All right, everyone. I am Denise Dameron, Executive Director of the United Way, and I am here with some great, amazing ladies.
I'm Megan Duncan, and I am a board member here at the United Way.
My name is Tara Wingo, and I'm a forensic interviewer for the Child Advocacy Center of Northeast Missouri.
And I'm Amy Vaughn, Lead Prevention Education Specialist for the Child Advocacy Center of Northeast Missouri.
So each month we're highlighting a great different organization that United Way has the opportunity to partner with. April happens to be Child Abuse Prevention Month, and thus we are working with our friends at the Child Advocacy Center to highlight the great work that they do. So Amy, can you give a little bit of an overview? Really, what is it that, you know, what's the mission of the Child Advocacy Center?
Well, since you ask, I'm just going to read it verbatim so that everyone knows and is clear. Deliver excellence in child abuse response, offer a path toward healing, and educate the community. And we do that through the forensic interviews that Tara is going to talk to you about here in a moment, our advocacy program, our therapy services that we offer, and then, of course, the prevention education that I provide.
And so do you want to go in a little bit? Because that is a very noble mission. Abuse response and help those kiddos heal. But if you could go in, Amy, a little bit about, you know, really, can you talk about and start really just giving an overview about the prevention programs that are provided to the community?
Well, the Child Advocacy Center of Northeast Missouri is fortunate to have such a strong prevention education program. There are child advocacy centers all over, but very few of them have the prevention education component that we offer. And so we are blessed. We have specific programs from all ages, ranging from pre-K all the way through high school. Melissa Miller is the prevention education specialist that has been with us for the last 8 years, and she has done a phenomenal job of going in and doing those programs to basically just educate kids. We talk about safety, the body safety rule. It's just like any other safety rule that the kids might learn, doing fire drills, tornado drills. It doesn't mean that this is going to happen, but just in case it does, we give kids tools as to what they can do, and hopefully just give them a voice to feel empowered to disclose if something does happen to them.
And I love that analogy. The fact, you know, we practice fire drills, we practice tornado drills, and this just is another thing we just in case.
Just like, in case. And that's exactly how we present it. We try and do just very age-appropriate programs that are, we have these, we call them cool moves, and we do a little get away to a safe place because we're telling them to get away from the person that's trying to harm them. And then we always talk about the most important thing that they can do is to tell a trusted adult. And we have these little hand movements that we do with the kids.
Don't do those with the high schoolers, I assume?
No, we don't. They aren't too into the hand movements. But with the little kids, they really get into it. And we talk about how if they tell someone and they don't get the help that they need, because sadly, sexual abuse sometimes is something that people don't want to talk about, people don't want to tell. And so if they tell someone and they don't get the help that they need, we always encourage them to continue telling other people until they find someone who can help them. So we also teach internet safety in the school district. So we have programs on internet safety. As they get into middle school and high school, we touch more on healthy relationships and setting boundaries and just really knowing your self-worth and expecting people to treat you with that respect that you so much deserve. We are in no way sex education. I am so thrilled. Our main goal is to prevent sexual abuse and sexual assault. And that is all we are doing. So we talk to kids about red flags if they get into a relationship.
And these are with your older kids.
Yes,
of course,
this is with the older kids. If they see controlling behavior, if they see individuals who are trying to break their boundaries and not respecting those boundaries that they've set for themselves. So those are all really wonderful lessons that I wish someone had taught me when I was that age. And so that's kind of what we do. Meg, I see you're chomping at the bit. You want to say something?
I love the fact that you guys are educating on this because, you know, while there's a lot of proactive parents, I really don't, there's so many kids that don't get these lessons.
I would agree. And honestly, I think that it's not so much because parents don't want to talk to their kids, but I think it's they don't know how to talk to their kids about this. And so that leads into other prevention education programs that we have. We offer, and all of our programs are free of charge. And so we do offer parenting programs on how to talk to your kids about body safety and how to protect your kids from potential abuse, both in person and online. We have an internet safety program for parents. We have an internet safety 201, which is even a little bit more advanced in regards to how to protect your kids. 1 in 5 kids will be sexually solicited online. And the one that really bothers me the most is the age of first exposure to pornography. And because of the kids having all this technology at their fingertips, kids are getting that first exposure at an incredibly young age, too young. And statistics show that it was saying 11 years of age was typically the age of first exposure, but new research is now showing that 9 years of age is probably closer. And I've done several programs just in the last couple weeks, and I had a grandparent tell me that their 5-year-old had been on YouTube Kids and been exposed to pornography on YouTube Kids accidentally.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's because the kiddo clicks on something that looks like a cartoon, but some nasty adult, because I don't know another word to... Well, there's some other words I can use.
Be appropriate.
Yes, yeah. You know, have made pornography by using the little cartoon characters, and then a kiddo is mortified by what they saw, because why is Barbie and Ken? I don't know. Yeah. You know, like why was that?
Yeah. Right. And you know, once you've seen that, someone asked in a program yesterday, how do you unsee it? Well, you can't.
No.
And so I also encountered someone this week that said that they had a pornography addiction, and their first exposure was 7 years of age. And so again, we're just setting kids up for real problems if we don't address that. And so that's why those internet safety programs for parents are so vitally important, where parents can learn how to set those parental controls.
And you actually can walk parents through that directly.
Yes, we can. We can teach them how to set those parental controls, how to set up passwords to protect any downloads, every download that your child wants to download. If you have the password, you can password protect that. And it's a great program. So I would highly encourage parents to take advantage of that. Would love to speak to parent groups. And so those are all really good things that we offer.
Because there's so much more than, you know, all the kids that are exposed to this, there's no demographic.
There's no.
It's not my kid.
No.
My voice is giving out. But there's no not my kid situation.
No.
It's
no child. No child is immune.
Yes.
And one of the stats that I used yesterday in the presentation at the United Way Lunch and Learn was that up to 40% of child abusers are more powerful, older kids. So kid on kid is happening a lot as well. And again, I think the pornography adds to that. And again, some kids have already themselves been molested, and so they become reoffenders. So it's just a nasty cycle.
And do you want to talk a little bit too then, Amy? I think you're kind of leading that way. Do you want to talk about how sometimes when a kiddo is in a classroom and they have that education come in, and it could be little bitty people in a kindergarten classroom or in an elementary classroom, how that ultimately leads into the Child Advocacy Center then has provided that child with the knowledge and a voice to say,
oh, definitely.
Stop, wait a minute, that happened to me. Someone didn't respect my private body parts. That, you know, you've empowered them then with a voice.
Definitely, definitely. And I will tell you, and Tara can probably speak to this more, we have seen a number of kids following the prevention programs that we do come forward and say, I need to talk to somebody about this. I actually wrote this up for our grant writer because she's always looking for stories to share in grants. And there, I was in a middle school, and the sixth grade boy, we were talking about how if you need to talk to someone, there's always people to talk to. We can connect you with the counselors. And he raised his hand in the middle of the program and said, I need to talk to you after class. And in front of his entire class, it was just like a light bulb had come on and it had empowered him to say, I can talk to someone about this. So it's, I am honored.
It rips your heart out, but it's also like, that's a win for that kid.
Really, really is. And so many of these kids, and sadly, so many adults have gone through these types of things and felt like they could never tell anyone that it had happened. And so even today, we're sharing that it's never too late to tell someone, even if you're an adult. It's never too late to share those tragic stories that have happened to you. And so I am just honored to be a part of this ministry. I'm going to call it a ministry. I really am honored to be a part of it. And so thankful. I appreciate Tara and I appreciate Katie. Tara's probably going to touch on what Katie does, but I'm going to turn it over to Tara now to talk a little bit about the, is there anything else you had on the prevention?
So I was like, so really then a child's empowered to share this terrible bad thing happened to me. And then what happens? So they tell a trusted adult. We'll say that that trusted adult then makes a hotline. To, you know, there's a child abuse hotline number that if you are an individual and you suspect a child is being abused or neglected, you call this number. I could pull it up, actually, I guess. You don't have it memorized. 1-877. I think it is literally 1-877. I'm going to look.
I don't have it memorized. I have it as a tab on the top of my...
3, so 1-800-392-3738. So that's the Missouri hotline number. So a hotline is made, and then what happens, Tara?
Well, when the hotline is made, an investigation sometimes begins. It has to meet certain criteria, and I do not determine those. So generally what happens is if Children's Division decides that it does meet those criteria, then the investigation begins. And I'm just part of that investigation. And so Children's Division will often send in what we call a referral for a forensic interview. Sometimes those referrals will come from the juvenile office. Sometimes they'll come from law enforcement. But those people all in those agencies all make up what we call an MDT, which is our multidisciplinary team. And so we're all working together on different pieces of that investigation. So once the referral reaches, for me, it's Katie Neff. She does intake and advocacy at our office. And once the referral reaches her, she will start to make connections with the family. If there is one involved, if the child's not in care, she'll make connections with law enforcement, with the juvenile office, if appropriate, and with Children's Division to try to schedule a forensic interview. And so what we like to do and what we like to see happen is as soon as someone tells something, we get them in right away, if at all possible.
Especially, I assume, the younger they are, too.
Yes, because the younger kids, you know, they have a limited amount of time that they're going to remember details about things. And also, if the child is not injured or something like that, we would even like to interview them prior to any kind of medical examination. And we, you know, that medical examination, if there is anything that could possibly be found, if something has happened within the last 96 hours, they can still possibly get in, and there could be things that are found during the medical exam. Mm-hmm. Now, I will stop here and just say that even though prevention focuses on sexual abuse, the forensic interview services, we do interviews for children who are possible victims of sexual abuse, physical abuse, mm-hmm. witnesses to violent mm-hmm. crimes, chronic runaways. Those kids are usually running away from something or sure. toward something. Trafficking, domestic violence, things like that. And so we really want to encourage those who send referrals in to send them in for all of those things. And often those kids who experience one of those things are experiencing another one. And so we refer to that as polyvictimization. And so many kids are experiencing more than one type of abuse or harm, and we're going to screen for that during the forensic interview. And so the forensic interview is basically a conversation with the child. It's child-led. We tend to start with kids who are around the age of 3 or just whenever they can really communicate up to age 17. We have had a few adults that I've had permission to interview, and then also adults who have developmental delays. Those are also people that we interview fairly often. And so what happens when they come in for the forensic interview is they're explained by Katie before they come in kind of what to expect. Parents can ask questions and things like that.
Well, and everybody in that moment is so scared and yeah. just yeah. so yes. uncomfortable yeah. and just mm-hmm. in a terrible place in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And most of them haven't. I shouldn't say most of them. A lot of them have never been through something like that mm-hmm. before. They've never expected sure. to. They don't know what steps to take. Others have. I mean, you know, we see some kids that we see them
repetitively.
Yeah, repetitively for different things that have happened mm-hmm. to them. We see sibling groups and things like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if a child has not been perpetrated on, they still have information about what's happened. Mm-hmm. And so that group of people, whether it's a family or if they're in care, will come in. Katie will meet them. She'll give them their paperwork. And then after that, I go meet the kid for just a few minutes. I'm a neutral part of the investigation, so I do not spend a lot of time in most cases with the children before we interview, because I need to be able to protect that neutrality piece in case something happens and it goes to court. And I have to be able to defend every question that I ask, every, sure. you know, the amount of time I spend with the children prior to the interview. But
well, and even talked about when I had the opportunity mm-hmm. to take my intern yeah. and then a job shadow student through. Mm-hmm. And you talked about even if kiddos get hungry, have you met kids are always hungry?
Oh, yeah.
But mm-hmm. you talked about the fact you can't give them like super good, like candy type snacks
yeah.
or cookies. You have to give them things, boring snacks,
yeah.
pretzels, or because otherwise it could look at. Mm-hmm. Like
coercing
the
child. Crazy.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Like, I wouldn't give them those Girl Scout cookies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we tend to have are what we consider bland snacks. But some kids come in and they are hungry. They've either been in a rush or mm-hmm. they just didn't get that done this morning. And so we want to make sure, you know, no one wants to talk to people they've never met on an empty stomach. And so we have pretzels and things like Cheez-Its or Goldfish, sometimes mm-hmm. those little fruit snacks, stuff like that. Only give them water, mm-hmm. No sodas or anything like that. And so I'll meet the kid briefly, and then I'll meet with the team for a few minutes and just kind of go over what the allegations are. And I don't want to know too much background because I want to keep my bias down sure. during the interview.
You don't
interview.
Want to ask any leading mm-hmm. questions.
Right. Correct. And so at that point, Katie will show them the room just so they're acclimated a little bit. Mm-hmm. They know where they're going. Parents know where they're going. They know that they're in a safe place to talk. And they're going to be observed the whole time because we use closed caption television. And so the MDT, the multidisciplinary team, is able to watch from a room during my interview. And this what this does is this tends to cut down on the amount of people that the child has to speak to about what happened, because that gets into the child talking about different things to different people, which is normal. I mean, if we go on a trip somewhere and I come back and I talk to my mom and I tell her about the trip and I talk to my son and I talk to my best friend, I'm going to tell them about different things. But defense attorneys sometimes like to harp on things that are different in what you told the police officer and what you told me and what you told mom and things like that. And that is just normal human behavior to tell different things, but maintain consistency with the overall story. And I shouldn't say story. It's not a story. We talk about experiences and things that happened or didn't happen to the child. But
it's their truth.
Yeah, it is.
And there are some studies about truthfulness during these interviews, and tends to be that children omit things rather than make things up.
Okay.
So they don't elaborate as much as what is actually the things that have happened, because disclosure happens in stages.
Sure.
And they go through sometimes stages of denial. Sometimes they're in active disclosure. Sometimes they're in tentative disclosure. Like, they may tell you a little something about what happened. They may tell you who, but not tell you exactly what, but it was something that wasn't okay, you know. But my job is to get as many details of what actually happened from the child. And the way that I do that is to ask child-friendly questions. And we are specially trained to do that, but I never make a child tell me things if they're not ready to talk. And you know, I'm also looking for things that might show that this didn't actually happen, or this person didn't actually do this, because I'm going to ask things like, well, you said that so-and-so touched you there. Has someone else ever touched you there? And if they say yes, then I'm going to explore that, because we know that children, especially of certain ages, might get confused about something that someone did. And talk about that someone else did it. And so we just want to make sure that we are asking the right questions in the right way to elicit narratives from the children.
Because obviously you also don't want to convict someone that's innocent.
Of course.
It's like, no, we want to know the truth. So
what a hard job you have.
She does.
I can't imagine. Yeah. And the thing is, like, what... I would never sleep, but I don't think I would either.
Yeah.
And just some of the things you've shared that, you know, young people have shared with you that, and you're like, no child should know that.
No
child should have experienced that and be able to share these vivid details. Mm-hmm. Clearly this terrible, awful thing did happen.
Yes.
So.
Well, and one of the things that we talk about in prevention education that kind of goes along with this, it's so hard for these kids because over 90% of the people who sexually abuse children, perpetrators, are someone the child either likes, loves, or lives with.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it even so much harder when this is someone that the child loves. This is someone that the child likes. This is someone the child lives with.
And do you want to talk too how then that family support piece that Katie then provides is critical, because sometimes this might be the breadwinner of the household that has victimized their, you know, a child within the household, whether that be their child or, you know, stepchild or whatever it might be.
And those are things that we call blocks and barriers. And the children, like you said, may have absolute reasons. Like, they may love the person so much, all they want is for the abuse to stop. You know, they don't want to get the person in trouble. And things like that. So yes, Katie follows up with families. She's providing resources. She also, if things are happening with the legal system, she helps to walk families through those things. She does a lot of work,
I will say,
in our office. She is busy all the time, and she is an excellent, excellent advocate to have on your side if you're a family.
I would agree completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that she also does is we talk after each interview about whether we want to refer a child to a safe exam, which is, you know, if the child has disclosed penetration, if the child has concerns about their body in any way, whether it's physical or sexual or anything like that, we want to go ahead and refer them to a safe exam because, like I said, the disclosure comes in phases. Sometimes they're going to come in and tell me a certain amount. It's kind of like a kind of a safety thing sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes kids come in and they tell you everything and you can get every detail. You're probably not getting every detail of every abuse, but full details of what happened on, say, 3 or 4 different times. Mm-hmm. And what we try to do as well is if the abuse happened in multiple locations, I'll try to get an example of abuse that maybe happened at home, one that happened somewhere else, or in different rooms of the home and things like that. And but anyway, we will send for a safe exam at like Cardinal Glennon.
And that's a physical exam where
it is
trained pediatrician looks specifically at a child to see what medically has occurred.
And it is not a gynecological exam. And I do want to stress that a lot of times kids are really reluctant to have that exam. Parents don't want to put children through it. But they are very, very just excellent people to talk to your kids. Sometimes kids disclose more during the exam. And they also can make them know that their bodies are okay, that they are safe. And if they're not, they can treat things that might show up on that exam. And then Katie is also, she is paying attention during the part of the interview she's able to see. And then what we talk about whether there should be a therapy referral. And so that kind of brings it full circle that we go from prevention to referral to the forensic interview and advocacy, and then to a therapy referral. And I know that Amy mentioned about those children who are perpetrating on other children, and we are seeing a lot more of that these days. But our therapy department does have a problematic sexual behavior group for kids that fall between the, I believe it's between the ages of 7 and 12, work with children who might be doing things like that, and oftentimes they are victims of abuse as well.
For anyone who ever has worked with young people, it's like a child isn't going to just naturally start doing terrible sexual things to another child without having some type of exposure,
whether it's pornography or whether it's actual abuse.
And that pornography is really bad.
Yes,
it is really bad.
Absolutely. So nonetheless, the work that you guys do is so critical. It's so hard. It's so raw and real. You see so much of the worst, but yet you provide hope. You provide a light. I'm going to go through every United Way's campaign theme. you are the light. Be a light. Okay, that's got that here. You give hope. That's a few years ago. The be a hero stuff. You are the hero. So nonetheless, you really just equip young people with an opportunity to change the next chapter of their story.
Absolutely. Oh, definitely. And one thing that I didn't mention when we talked about prevention education that we always stress to kids and anyone that's listening to this who has experienced any kind of abuse, it's not your fault. And that's what we always stress that to the kids.
That's right.
It's not your fault. You've not done anything wrong. And so many of these perpetrators are star manipulators, and they manipulate, they groom, and so they make kids feel like it is their fault, but it is not their fault.
That's right.
And we are always very emphatic to make sure that kids know that they have done nothing wrong, that it's not their fault, and that it's always okay to tell someone.
I can't imagine
carrying that burden, and especially a young child.
Well, so. And so many people do. So many people do.
Well, the statistics, if you can just go over those again, one in 10
children before the age of 18 will be sexually assaulted. And that's typically 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys, but boys tend to drastically underreport because men are supposed to be viewed as strong and
masculine.
And they're afraid if they report, they'll be viewed as weak. And then 2, if the perpetrator was a male, which many times it is, they'll be afraid that they'll be perceived as gay. And so we believe that that statistic is probably closer to 1 in 4, 1 in 5. Same with the girls. So again, when you think about it, I mean, there's 4 of us in this room. There's 4 of us in this room. And when you think about it in terms like that, it happens a lot, and it's not okay.
No, they're walking by so many people that it's happened to. Every day. That's just so sad.
So I think more than anything, as we wrap up here, equipping people once again, if you know of someone who you think just something just doesn't seem right and you know some facts, definitely if it's a child, use that Missouri hotline number, which is 1-800-392-3738. Report what you know. It doesn't, you know, your job is to not to investigate it. It's just to share the facts of what you know. Also, if you're part of a group that could schedule a prevention program with a group of adults, a group of kids.
Would love to do that.
Amy would love to come and provide that prevention education, whether it be a parent program to talk about keeping kids safe on the internet, or just things to how to have those body safety conversations. We are very open in our house, and we have all the conversations because I want to equip my kids with the opportunity to be safe and know those healthy boundaries. And I encourage other families, go ahead and rip that band-aid off. Call me. I'm happy to talk to you through what we talk about. So,
Well, and we also provide mandated reporter trainings for organizations that work specifically with kids, medical facilities. I'm working with the hospital, trying to get the hospital on board to do some mandated reporter trainings. So we provide those trainings. I'm also going to be trained in a phenomenal program called Stewards of Children. I'm going in May to get qualified.
Train the trainer in order
to be able to facilitate, but it's called Stewards of Children, and I would love to come and do presentations to your church. Because we are all stewards of children, regardless of where we are, our communities, we all are responsible for caring for our kids.
And once again, you know, church groups, community groups, moms groups, a group of friends on a Friday night.
Definitely.
No pressure, Amy.
I've already told my husband, I can tell I'm going to be working a lot of nights and weekends. So, but that's okay, because that's when people can meet. So, just give us a call.
And can you share your contact information?
I sure can. It's 573-221-2256, and I'm at extension 125. Or my email is avaughn@cacnemo.org. And that's CAC Child Advocacy Center and Nemo, Northeast Missouri.
And that's also the website. CACNEMO.org, and so you can definitely look up information to better understand the work of the Child Advocacy Center. And also, a lot of times there's papers that come home saying that we're going to have a program in our school to teach body safety, and the team at the Child Advocacy Center, as Amy alluded to, you know, we don't talk about, we're not educating kids on sex. That's not what we do. Rather, it's providing that body safety piece and equipping kiddos with the knowledge they need to keep themselves, and sometimes advocate for friends.
Definitely.
As well. So, but thank you ladies so much for coming.
Thank you for sharing.
You guys have a more than tough job, but, you know, please just, you know, rest assured that you're I'll be your biggest cheerleader, yeah. But also appreciate you guys so much for giving kiddos a voice.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you for funding us.
Yes. Well, we are so happy to, yes. you know, have great partners that do the tough work each and every day. So yes. thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.